You hear the chant in here?
I love it, Gabe. I love it.
Hello, everyone. The NBL Pocket Podcast is where you've come. You know that already by now. My guest this week is Tom Hirsch from NBL.com.au. We talk about the FIBA World Cup and all six sessions of the NBL Blitz from Tasmania that happened over the weekend. Then at the end, Tom gives his tiers and standings for what he thinks how it's going to play out in NBL 20. And then, and that's about all. Just a side note, 8,647 people turned out to the games in Tasmania for the Blitz. It's a great turnout for the NBL. John Roberson of the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix won the Ray Borna MVP medal. David Barlow, the three-point contest, and Terry Armstrong was the slam dunk champion. Quick news recap around the NBL. The NBL will be streaming 52 games live on Facebook in the United States. Is anybody surprised at this point? Brisbane won the Loggins Bruton Cup of the Blitz. They had won the most games by the most margins or the most quarters. I'm not really sure how it works out. Doesn't really matter. My big question is, why is it the Loggins Bruton Cup and not the Bruton Loggins? I wonder how they sorted out who went first. Probably rock, scissors, paper. Most of you have probably already heard the Adelaide 36ers PR debacle with Aboriginal artist Elizabeth Clothes. You can visit Body's website for more on that one, or just Facebook. In fact, I encourage you to go to Facebook. Elizabeth Close, Aboriginal artist, is her page on Facebook. She tells the whole story from her end. Not a good look for them. And then fun things. NBL Fantasy is now open. So I'm new to it. I really don't know what I'm doing. So I've got to check with a few people how best to select a team and play that. But it is open, and get involved. Other than that, guys, that is it. Enjoy this interview with Tom Hirsch.
Let's rewind. Before we talk about the Blitz, let's talk about the FIBA World Cup, preferably from an NBL perspective. But my question to you, Tom, is when I say Australia at the FIBA World Cup, Tom Hirsch says what?
I say it's a team that was resilient, but clearly lacking depth. And I think that's what held them back in the end. And, you know, we've heard a lot about the load that was put on the main guys. The Mills, the Ingles, Baines obviously getting banged up towards the end of the tournament as well. And I think they were just one or two players away from really pushing it and being a bit more comfortable in some of those games. The thing about that as well is if you think about the earlier games, the deeper your team is, potentially the more you can kind of blow out some of those margins earlier and get your main guys some rest. But from an NBL perspective, look, Nick Kay is obviously the big winner here. He really showed out. He really played his role to perfection, which, you know, people weren't really sure how he'd fare on that international stage, but he's proven himself, and he'll have the eyes of the world on him now heading into NBL 20. Andrew Bogut, I thought, looked great as well. He's clearly in shape and ready to go. He'll be in for another big season. And Chris Golding, we know what he can do. Obviously looked really good too. It was a shame we didn't get to see a bit more from guys like Nathan Sobey and you know, Cam Glidden to get a chance. But, you know, they'll be better for the experience and for seeing different styles and being over there with the team and learning from those other boomers. So, look, it was a really good turnout, I thought. And from those NBL guys specifically, it's just a great opportunity to expand their basketball experience.
Were you surprised that Mills wasn't in that? At the very least, I was sort of surprised he wasn't in the MVP conversation. I was also very surprised he wasn't in that top five. Was that one of the biggest surprises for you coming out of the tournament or something else?
No, I think it was very surprising and it was very unfortunate. I think at the end of the day, it came down to France won a bronze medal and needed representation in that All-Star 5. And unfortunately, that meant that Fortier got in over Mills, whether that's the right decision or not. I mean, obviously, we're going to be biased from our perspective and say no. And Paddy was obviously in the MVP conversation for a lot of that tournament, so probably hardly done by. But I don't think he's too worried about All-Star 5 appearances. I think he's going to be more hurting from going home without a medal around his neck.
Yeah, for sure. Let's shift gears to the Blitz. My first question I had is from a journalistic perspective. When you're watching the Blitz, it's easy to get caught up in, you know, watching a team and getting over, you know, putting too much emphasis on the Blitz. Maybe there's a bit of a problem with putting too little emphasis on the Blitz. When you're watching it, what do you think sort of best translates from the Blitz to the season?
Yeah, sure. So, look, the first thing that does not translate is the results. I really don't put too much stock into it. Confidence going to the season, But it really means little at the end of the day. What I look for, though, are a few different things. I look for the combinations of players that work well together out on the floor.
Okay.
Some of the rotations, obviously, coaches are quite often testing those during these preseason games and trying out different rotations. And also look at the aggression of players. You know, what role they're playing, what mindset they're coming into games with, how they attack things, and you know that's true of both the new players coming into the league. So you look at someone like Ateur Majuk and what he did, especially in that game yesterday against Southeast
Big
Melbourne
time.
Phoenix.
Yeah, that was amazing.
And look, that shows me that he's ready to play a role and a major role, and he's going to add to New Zealand's depth, which is a bonus, and they weren't necessarily sure what they had in him. But clearly he can contribute at both ends of the floor and is going to be someone to watch as this season progresses. So that's one thing. Then you look at some of the younger guys who are developing and, you know, have a little bit of experience under their belt, someone like a Dan Greeter, who came out super aggressive the whole weekend.
I tweeted out, I just said, he's probably one of the best guys attacking the rim for a local. Like, he just attacks with such strength and such speed. It's incredible. Sorry to interrupt, Tom, you were saying.
No, you're absolutely right. And look, and that's the difference between him last year and this year. And look, I've been following Dan for a couple of years, saw him at a couple of the NBL combines over the years, and his confidence has just grown from someone who never wasn't even sure if he'd make the NBL to now not only having made it, cemented his place, he's a big rotation player, and now he's got NBA scouts looking at him and keeping an eye on his progress. But the thing that I liked about him this weekend is he's really understanding the game more now and where his lanes or his holes to attack are, and really just going after it. And he knows he's got nothing to lose. He's going to get himself to the ring. He's fast, he's athletic, and you know, and he can finish. So that was great. Another example is someone like Kyle Adam, who's now on his third team, but he's been around the traps enough to know how he can be effective. And again, when to attack, when not, when to look to set up others, and when to look for his own shot. And I think he's going to be really good in terms of Southeast Melbourne's depth this year. He can obviously play a role behind John Robertson, or he can play alongside Robertson at times. And that was pleasing to see as well. You know, there are guys missing on all these teams as well. But I look for their mindset as they come in. What have they been working on? Right. How have their games grown? And what sort of role can we expect them to play this year?
Yeah, sure. Bit of a departure. Did you have any problems with the streams? I had a few bits and bobs troubles, but all in all, it was pretty good. Did you have any troubles?
I did, especially during the dunk contest yesterday.
Yeah, the dunk contest. The three-point contest came in at the end of Barlow's round, and then the dunk comp. I really only saw Terry Armstrong's really good dunk. I didn't see any others.
Yeah, and I think that was the same for most people, which is unfortunate. There must have been something going on, because for the most part, it was pretty good. It was a little spotty here and there, but for the most part, it was pretty good. And, you know, it's never easy to cover those things from those regional stadiums, but it was great to get to watch as much as we did.
Speaking of what we saw, the uniforms. There was a sort of a collage of pictures that came out a little while ago of each uniform. We saw them in motion. Did you have a favourite?
There's a couple that I like. I like the Southeast Melbourne Phoenix ones. Yeah. Maybe it's just because they're different and they're new. But I especially like the dark one, the ash grey one with the green. I think that really pops on the screen. And I actually really like the Illawarra Hawks white strip that they wore yesterday. Something about that with the red at the top. Just looked a bit different and refreshing to me as well. So those are probably the two that I like the most.
I really dug the Wildcat white one with the scratches down the side. Really simple, really clean, but for some reason I just really liked it. And the style of the numbers have changed. I think they may be bigger than last season. I'm not sure, but I like them too. Let's jump onto the actual session. So session one was Brisbane versus the NBL One team and Cairns versus Adelaide. My first question that jumped out to me from this game, I was quite surprised. Lamar Patterson's physique, do you think that's a cause for concern? I only saw it on the stream. Maybe I'm missing something that people saw in person. What do you think?
Oh, look, he's clearly not in peak physical shape, but he doesn't need to be at this stage of the year. Like, you don't want him to be peaking in October. You want him peaking in January and February when they're making a push for the finals. So would you like him to come in better shape and ready to go? Yes, of course. Is it cause for concern? I don't think so.
Okay.
You saw what he was still capable of in that game against Adelaide. It's not exactly like it's slowing him down and preventing him from performing. So I think he'll work his way in the next couple of weeks before the season proper starts, and he'll be just fine.
Do you think he's been told to put on a bit of size because Brisbane's gone for that really interchangeable, you know, 2-3-4-5 type sort of setup? maybe.
I don't know. I think someone like Patterson, you want him to play his game, not to really adapt his game to suit the team. Obviously, they're stacked on the wing and they're probably lacking some depth at the four spot. I think it's maybe Braun that might play a bit more at the four. Patterson could slide over there at times, but he was strong enough anyway to hold his own there. I don't think he needed to put in an extra bulk.
Fair enough. Cairns looked good against Adelaide. I think Shane Heal put out a tweet saying, like, are we all certain that Cairns are the wooden spoon, the most likely wooden spooners? What do you think?
Yeah, unfortunately, I think they still are. And this is where, again, you don't read too much into Blitz results. Because they looked really good in that game, and there's some promising signs. Quatnoy looked great and attacking. Cam Oliver's going to obviously be a load to handle. Machado's a great talent. But like last year, I think what they're lacking is local depth, local talent depth. And that's what's going to hold them back. And I think that's probably true of a couple of other teams as well. When you stack up all the teams, that's the difference. I mean, people are pretty good these days at getting their imports right for the most part. You know, some of those can change, but for the most part, they know what they're looking for and the certain roles they're playing. And I think they've done really well in that facet, again, Mike Kelly and his staff. But they just don't have the talent. I mean, you look at them, there's no boomers, there's no prospective boomers really there, except for maybe Noi. Obviously, nature-wise, been there and done that in the past, but he plays a limited role now off the bench, and that's going to be his role. You lose guys like Alex Loughton, who's retired. That's what's going to hold them back in my mind, and I think that's a gap that I see between them and some other teams too.
And it hasn't changed. Sure. Session two was Illawarra versus Perth, Melbourne versus New Zealand Breakers. My question to you straight up from this was, he had a really good alley-oop finish. Is Nick Kaye the best power forward in the NBL next season?
Well, until someone proves otherwise, then yes. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what's changed. He dominated last season in all NBL first team, just had a phenomenal tournament in China with the Boomers. He's the guy at that spot at the moment. And you look around the league, and the only other guy that I think would be in the conversation right now is probably Ty Wesley, who would get an honourable mention from me at that spot. But I don't really see anyone else that would challenge those two guys.
Even
with some of the imports.
I haven't seen any MVP numbers. I've seen sportsbet.com.au have a LaMelo Ball line exclusively. I think he's at $13. But I haven't seen anything that's MVP numbers on Nick Kaye. If Nick Kaye's not in that top five, because obviously he made NBL first team last year, so he's in the top five in the league conversation, or top seven, depending on the position. But to me, he's not even a sneaky, but he's an MVP candidate for sure.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And he's just, the thing you love about Nick Kaye is he's just consistent game to game. He's someone that I describe as really, really, really good at a lot of things without necessarily being elite at any one thing.
Right.
He won't dominate in any one area, maybe on the offensive board, but he just does a bit of everything game in and game out, and he finds a way to make plays and to be effective and to impact the game, and I think that's where his value lies.
Yeah, and I think also the synergy between Nick Kaye and the Perth Wildcats is sort of a match made in heaven. Moving on to Melbourne... my question to you, Tom, is will Melbourne be the best offense in the NBL next season?
Well, does that depend highest, how you define?
Let's define it as so, highest scoring.
Probably not, to be honest. I mean, I think they'll be one of the better offenses in terms of efficiency, but I don't see any reason why Adelaide won't still probably average the most points as they tend to do, just because they push the pace every year. But I think, Melbourne, in terms of the depth of their offensive talent, is immense, and they've just added to that this season. You add a scorer like Mello Trimble, who is a better scorer than Casper Ware, if I can say that. He may not be a better all-around player, but he's a better scorer. And a more consistent offensive threat at the five in Sean Long over what Josh Boone gave them last year. And then you bring back Casey Prather, who knows how to perform in this league, and no disrespect to DJ Kennedy, but again, he's a better offensive weapon than what DJ Kennedy was. So they have just added to their offensive output. They could average the most points per game, but I think they'll be the most efficient. I think that's what will be most important to Dean Dickerman.
Defensively, where do you think they sit from what you saw in the Blitz and just their roster composition? Where do you think they sit in the league defensively as far as defensive efficiency?
And this has been a question mark when you add guys like Trimble, who didn't really show that much on that end of the floor last year. But again, the value in having someone like Dean Dickerman, as your head coach, who is a defense-first coach and will work with him every day and has already started to do that. And you saw some of that over the weekend. Mm. I think they're going to be a top three-ranked defense. And they could push. They could push to be one of the top one or two teams as well. That's going to depend on how much Trimble buys in at that end. And it's going to depend on how much Sean Long can resist the temptation to gamble and stay at home at times. We know what a tremendous rim protector is, but if he can actually just clog the paint and change shots as much as blocking them, then that makes them great as well.
New Zealand, their point guard situation. RJ Hampton, 18 years old, looked pretty good at times. And then their backup, presumably Jared Weeks, that's the way they'll go. Do you think those two can hold court against the crop of NBL point guard talent? Game to game is my worry.
Yeah, it's a really good question. Weeks knows how to play that role. You know what you're getting out of him, and I think he gets a little bit better every year and a little bit more confident. You talk about, at the top, we talked about guys like Kyle Adner who know their role and when to be effective, and I put Weeks into that class as well, right? So that's fine. It's Hampton's the question mark there, right? Yeah. And this is where the inexperience is going to show, and it's probably going to be their biggest challenge this season, because that roster is stacked offensively, if you look at it. You compare them with Melbourne United, and to me, those are the two deepest rosters in terms of top to bottom offensive talent. So it's how Hampton can stay consistent, game to game, can run the team and play within his role, that will measure up. You saw on the weekend what a problem his length can be on the defensive end of the floor, right? So that gives me confidence that he can hold his own. It's just going to be a consistency thing, which is you're going to expect of any young player. So, can they hold court? Yeah, potentially. I think they'll have some moments where they struggle. But overall, in the scheme of things, I think they'll be okay.
Do you think Perth will be the best defensively efficient team in the NBL again next season?
Well, I mean, that's their mantle to lose, if you ask me. Yeah. They've proven year in and year out that they can be, and I wouldn't expect anything else. And, their roster isn't vastly different from last year. You lose a guy like Greg Heyer, sure. Brand as well. But Dario Hunt can play that role that Brandt played. Mitch Norton hopefully will be healthy for a whole season, makes a big difference as well. And then you look at the development of guys like even Nick Kay, obviously another year under his belt, someone like Reece Vague potentially to step up. I think they'll be just fine. And Tarico White does a great job of letting them to the floor as well. So, there's no reason why they can't be.
Sure. Let's talk about, I call this front court fun, because there's a couple of personnel experiments that teams are going with, sort of a style transition, more in keeping with the game. What personnel experiment are you more interested or piques your interest most? Brisbane's front court of Matt Hodgson, Magne, Patterson, Braun, Singler, I guess is in that conversation, or New Zealand's Rob Lowe, Abercrombie, Delaney, Majuk, Abekpa, because they've got the scoring punch at their 1-2-3 spots. Which team are you most looking forward to see how it goes in their sort of 3-4-5?
I think it's Brisbane, only because there's probably more question marks over that roster, to be honest. Look, I love what Ata Majok brings to New Zealand. I love the emergence of Finn Delaney, and he looks like he's finally going to put it all together and have the confidence to be a consistent
game. They're putting a lot in on him. They're putting a lot on him, I think.
Yeah, and Abekpa looked good as well. He's going to play his role and do just fine. You know what you're getting out of Lowe and Abercrombie. Brisbane intrigues me more because, we spoke before about the holes at the four spot. Yeah. Can they hold that down with a combination of Patterson and Braun? How much does Nick and Vekona play? The emergence of Will Magne. We saw some great signs from him over the weekend. Another guy who is learning the game, learning how to be effective, and coming into his own and will benefit from having a year under his belt now. I wouldn't put too much expectations on him because you can get overhyped by guys at this time of year, but he'll definitely be improved from what we saw last year. Right. And learning from a guy like Matty Hodgson, who's been around the traps and knows how to be effective, will help. So I'm really intrigued by what that front court can offer.
Sure. Let's jump to session three, South East Melbourne versus Sydney. Sydney were underwhelming in this game. They seemed to just get... You were talking before about one thing that you like to watch to translate over to the season is sort of mindset or aggression. They didn't look it in this game. But I guess the other good thing about it was Roberson, who was outstanding. A vague question, but what did you take from this game?
Look, from a Sydney perspective, there's a couple of things. Forgetting the fact that Andrew Bogut wasn't there, forgetting the fact that Will Weaver's been away from the team for the past month and is coming in, new and fresh. I loved what Jordan Hunter showed. He's a guy who's new to the league. He's played a little bit overseas. But he's going to play a role this year. He's going to come in and contribute right away. And I think that might be a little bit of an added bonus for Sydney. The ability to play spot minutes and rest Bogut at times, the ability to potentially slide to the four on occasion and go really big if they need to. So that was a good sign. I took that, and he showed that across both games. The other real positive for Sydney is Kevin Lish just looks healthy.
Right.
And we know when he's healthy how dangerous he can be. And putting alongside Casper Ware another two-way guard, that becomes possibly the most dangerous backcourt combination in the league right away.
Yeah.
So you pair those guys, with Bogut up front, and I think there's still good signs from Sydney. I wouldn't worry too much about what we saw at the Blitz.
South East Melbourne?
I was really impressed. It's the first time I've had a really good look at them, to be honest. And I was chatting a little bit with Tommy Greer about this yesterday during that game.
Yep.
Roberson is phenomenal. I think he's going to be one of the better point guards in the league.
Had that real Casper Ware body, didn't you find? He had that real move like Casper Ware, and had a solidness to his body and game that reminded me of him.
Yeah. He's tough, he's strong, he knows how to get to his spots, he knows, again, when to attack, when to get others involved, and, he can play a role as a pass-first guy, or he can look for his own shot, and we saw both those elements over the weekend. We spoke already about Adnam. I like what he brings for them off the bench there. Kendall Stevens really impressed me. This is another thing I chatted with Tommy about yesterday. He's just a high IQ player. He just makes the right plays. And he's a really solid shooter, but he plays both ends and will play a really solid role for them on that wing position. Ben Magin, another guy, you're not sure what he's going to look like coming back into the league after so long away. To be honest, my first thought was maybe he should be their sixth man and come off the bench and provide that scoring punch role up there in kind of like a Kirk Penny way in his late Breakers days. But either whether he's starting or off the bench, he's just experienced at getting buckets. He made some plays defensively. He may struggle a little bit at times on that end of the floor, but again, good signs there. And again, look, Mitch Creek wasn't there. In either game, and he's obviously their centrepiece player. He's the guy that's going to, kind of be the glue that brings this team together. So there were some really pleasing signs. I mean, Ty Wesley, I've loved for years. He's phenomenal. You're getting from him game in and game out. They have a really good team for a first year in the league. Will they make the finals? I don't know, but they're a chance.
Sure.
If it all comes together, it may hinge on the effectiveness of their imports. But there are some really good signs.
Okay. Actually, Jayshaun Tate, I will quickly ask you, looking at Sydney, again, it's kind of a running theme of this season is what's going to happen in that 3-4. Are people going to go small? Are they going to go big? What did you like about him or not like? Or did you think he's got scoring prowess? Was he a rebounder enough for you? What did you think?
I like that he can do a bit of everything. Mm. So he can play big when he needs to, and he can play on the perimeter as well. And he's going to make plays on both ends of the floor. And you compare him to David Ware, who they had at that spot last year. Yeah. It's a completely different proposition. He's athletic. He can run. He can shoot. But he's strong, and he's not going to back down from anyone. So that gives you confidence when Andrew Bogut's out of the game that they're maybe not going to lose anything in terms of toughness, in terms of rebounding, in terms of defensive aggression at times.
Yeah.
And you can stick a Jordan Hunter next to him and still be comfortable that they can hold their own on the interior. Sure. He can also obviously step out and hit the three, which is key from that four spot in the modern game as well, and especially around Bogut in terms of spreading the floor. Mm. So I thought that was really good signs from him.
Yeah, and I was upset Bogut didn't play for a number of reasons, but number one being, I was really interested to see how that dynamic's going to be, those two. I mean, because David Ware, as you said, he was quite a mild-mannered chap. Like, he didn't fire up much. Whereas Jay Sean Tate had a real kind of nasty streak to him, in a good way. And that'll be exciting. Yeah. And you pair that with Bogut, that should be exciting. Let's jump to session four. Cairns played the NBL 1 and Adelaide played Brisbane. I guess the takeaway from Cairns NBL 1 is Isaac Turner, the NBL 1 star who put up a bunch of points. Would you agree with me that he's sort of this NBL 20's Jeremy Kendall now that sadly Jeremy Kendall's injured?
Yeah, he absolutely could be. I mean, he's another one of those guys that has the talent to play in the league, there's no doubt about that, but does he have the talent to play as an import, right? And that was always the knock on Kendall. There's no doubt he's as good as many of the local players in the league, but that import spot is a hard one to fill. Turner's a guy that could hang around some rosters, train with someone, and potentially get a look if there's an injury, absolutely. I was also chatting with Lewis Thomas on the weekend, who's in that team, played down for the Geelong Supercats this past year. Look, there was a challenge for those guys. They came together, they had one training session beforehand. It's an all-star team, so they haven't really played together with each other. But for all those guys, it's an opportunity to play in front of NBL coaches, in front of NBL assistant coaches, and just see what they can do at that level. You know, it's one thing to play against some of those NBL guys during the NBL one season, but the overall level is much higher when they're all together on the same floor. So, you know, Thomas is a guy that that trained with the Adelaide 36ers all last season and is also trying to get his opportunity. Not sure whether he will, but it's just great exposure for those guys. And I think, you know, Turner was the real winner, as you said, from that group.
Yeah, definitely. We're talking about my stream was a bit patchy on Adelaide versus Brisbane. I was hoping to see Adelaide. That was the one team I really wanted to see a lot of out of the Blitz, and I just didn't get the chance either for scheduling conflict or I couldn't quite get the stream working. What did you see from them, if you saw them, and thoughts on that team? Because I really want to know how they're going to go.
Yeah, I'm not sure where to place this team this year, to be honest. Yeah. I would always hesitate to write off a Joey Wright team. Mm-hmm. But again, like with Cairns, I have question marks over the depth of their local talent. And I think that's where they may struggle at times this year. So obviously Daniel Johnson's there, but the last 2 years they've lost Mitch Creek and they've lost Nathan Sobey, and now they're relying on guys like Anthony Drimmick and Harry Froling and I guess Jack McVeigh to make a bit of a leap this year.
They're three best locals.
I'm not sure if that's enough. Froling has NBA aspirations. He's going to be wanting to prove what he can do with a number of NBA scouts and eyes really on the league this year. Great opportunity for him. Can he do it consistently? Maybe. Does he play the four? Does he play the five? How did he work with Johnson? That'll be interesting to see.
It was a trouble last year. Like, Joey never quite worked out, or seemed to not quite work out, that Johnson, Froling, and when it was Wiley. You know, they never quite got a synergy. It's been interesting to see with one less. Maybe there's more of the pizza to go around. I don't know.
Yeah, potentially. But then you've got Eric Griffin now this year as well, who's going to play that Wiley kind of role. Deshaun Taylor is fantastic. He's going to push this team. They're going to be better at the one spot than they were last year, which will help a lot. It's just a matter of what they can get out of some of these other guys. You know, they've got experience, in the locker room, guys like Ben Antees and now Kevin White's there this year as well. That'll help, but do they have enough talent to actually be consistent and produce week in, week out? I'm not sure.
Session five, Southeast Melbourne versus New Zealand Breakers. What I really took from this one was at the end of the game when Santa said, and I quote, "Southeast Melbourne still have some movement within their roster." The inference, of course, is that Keith Benson, their third import or one of their imports, against New Zealand, he had 11 minutes, 3 points, 3 rebounds, 3 fouls. Against Sydney, in the earlier round, he had 10 minutes, 4 points, 4 rebounds, again, 3 fouls. What do you know of that situation with him? And just, those comments from Liam San Maria.
Yeah, look, I'm not sure exactly what Liam's heard that maybe I've not. I mean, as I said, I've spoken to Tommy Greer a little bit. I know they're working through with Keith Benson on exactly what his role needs to be and what they want out of him. Mm-hmm. And they're trying to get on the same page around that. I'm not sure if there'll be movement. It's possible if they don't get on the same page, there will be. But at the moment, I believe they've got every intention of still going into the season with Benson as their import five. He's clearly got the talent. There's no doubt about that. It's just a matter of him getting on the same page with the other guys. And they've had a disjointed pre-season with some guys away, obviously, with Mitch Creek not there. And Creeky will make a big difference because he's a culture setter. He's a locker room guy. He's the guy who's going to get everyone to buy in. And I think the more that he's back and around that team, some of these little challenges will get worked out. But we'll keep an eye on Benson and see how he starts the season with the Phoenix and see what goes from there.
Definitely. I do get a vibe from him that he's kind of like, if you remember from years ago, Ontario Lett played for the Wildcats. I think he played for Pittsburgh in college. Just fouled a lot, just couldn't stay on the floor for whatever reason. I never quite put my finger on it then. I didn't actually quite put my finger on it now, and obviously we've only seen two Blitz games, but that would be my thing with him, where he's just maybe adjusting to the way the league's call. He had 3 fouls in both of these, and it'd be interesting to see.
And we see that a lot from some of these big guys, like Jeremy Tyler the other year with the Kings was exactly the same. All talent in the world, just never put it together here in this particular league, and that happens sometimes. It may happen with Benson. I don't know. You'd like to think he can work through that though, and he's got the right veterans around him in Creek, in Robeson, in Wesley to
Gibson,
help with
maybe.
That.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, exactly.
Session 6: Perth versus Sydney, Melbourne versus Illawarra. Ball didn't play. Funnily enough, we haven't mentioned LaMelo Ball at this point. It was probably one of the standouts of the tournament. But anyway, Ball didn't play in this one, but the question I've got from this game and the Blitz in general, Tom Hirsch, you got the choice of Didi Luzada, LaMelo Ball, or Hampton. In a vacuum, regardless of what position your team needs or whatever, which of those three guys do you like the most or think is going to be the most effective next season?
Look, I think they're all going to have their moments this season, but if I pick one guy in terms of producing consistently game to game, I'm going with Didi Luzada at the moment.
Yeah, sure.
Just because he's got that, he's got a bit more experience, he's been there and done that, and he knows how to be effective. I was really impressed with LaMelo.
Yes,
for someone who has not been around this league at all, he's adjusting to the stars, adjusting to the strength of some of these guys as well. And he really showed out in that game against Perth a couple of nights earlier. RJ obviously looked great yesterday in their final game.
Yeah.
So they're all going to have their moments. They're all going to be effective.
But
Didi, I think, is just on another level at the moment. And there's a reason why he's been drafted. There's a reason why he dominated NBA Summer League. As Liam and Cam Luke were talking about on the broadcast. And I think he's ready to contribute right away. So are the other guys, but I think more consistently.
Yeah, I agree.
He has that slight edge for me.
If I take Didi off the table, LaMelo Ball or RJ Hampton of the two?
That's a tough one. I think LaMelo possibly has more raw talent right now.
Yep. I agree.
But I think Hampton is probably more of a two-way prospect at the moment.
Okay.
And in terms of coming in and playing a specific role, I don't know. That's a really tough question, Joseph. I'm not sure I want to answer that one.
That's quite all right. If I throw my hat in the ring, I think LaMelo Ball's got the higher ceiling, the lower basement, and also the greater competition at position. Hampton's got Jared Weeks backing him up, but you saw the talent for the Hawks, and you can list off about four names where it's Aaron Brooks for one, Sunday Deck is the other, Angus Glover is another. I'm probably forgetting someone else. There's a bunch of people at that position, so it's kind of like that spot for that.
Emmett Nahr,
there, of course. He was the one last year. It's kind of, that team's going to be kind of like plug and play. Like, oh, who's playing? Okay, LaMelo's got it. Great, he can have the minutes. Oh, okay, Sunday's got it. Okay, Angus has got it. Okay, next. So that, to me, is the one thing Ball's got to overcome. And I think his game is so, as we were saying, I was really impressed, and his game has got this such a flow to it, but it is a very, I just feel it could be mistake prone or at times, or so I think he's got the, whereas Hampton just seemed a little bit more in control, a little bit more whatever, but the flights of fancy that Ball had really impressed me, I thought. Anyway,
I completely agree.
Let's have a look here. Chris Golding didn't play for Melbourne, obviously still coming back from the World Cup or resting, what have you. Where does Golding fit on that team for you? Is he a starter? Will he be in their final five to close out games?
Look, I don't think it really matters whether he's a starter or not. We saw last year him play both roles and both be effective. And I think one of the beauties of their roster is they have that flexibility, especially from those guards. If I had to guess, I would say Golding will start. And Mitch McCarron will come off the bench.
Right.
But I think that's a bonus rather than a challenge for him to overcome either way, to be honest. you know, there's many schools of thought that Dolan wasn't happy coming off the bench. I don't know that I believe that, to be honest. I think he's at a stage of his career where he just wants to be successful and just wants to win. Mm-hmm. You know, obviously he wants to produce, right? And he likes being the man in Melbourne, and he plays to the crowd, sure. And the crowd loves him. He's a fan favorite
in that arena.
I see that week in, week out.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, he just wants to win, and you saw that in China with the Boomers, sure. Right? He was just happy to play his role and play it well and do it to the best of his ability. And just go after it. And I think he'll bring that same mindset this season.
Yeah.
It comes down to, for Dickerman, to what he wants out of that starting position. So I wouldn't be surprised if to start the season, maybe McCarron is there, because he brings a little more defensively, especially with Trimble at the one now, yeah. Instead of Ware, just to add a bit more defensive prowess. But then you've got Casey Prater there as well. So I don't think it really matters. And we know Golding's going to be there when they're closing out games. Yeah. There's no question about it. But I think all three of them will be on the floor at that point.
All three of them. So a closing lineup, or you know, the big fourth quarter lineups in Melbourne will be something like, could it be all of them? Trimble, McCarron, Golding, Prather, Sean Long.
That's what I think.
Okay. I mean, that's their best five. Let's go to Corey Homicide Williams and his tweets. I think they were this morning, maybe late last night. He tweeted, no Hotman Cup this season. Gone are the days when the first 8 of 11 home games for the Perth Wildcats are at home. The buffer is no longer. Last year, you wrote an article on the Wildcats that I really enjoyed. And the scheduling conflict with the Hotman Cup was a big part of that article. My first question is, yeah, do you agree with Homicide on that one?
No, I did not. And I was considering replying to him, and I thought, no, I'll save it for a private chat.
Yeah, sure.
I wouldn't read too much into that. As much as Corey said, he's changed and he's not going to ride the Perth Wildcats anymore. Of course he is.
Yeah.
Of course he is.
That's because
exactly. That's his clickbait. Mm. That's how he gets the Red Army to engage, and that's how he gets headlines, and that's how he keeps himself, you know, in those headlines. And not that he's ever not relevant in NBL circles, but even more relevant.
Yeah.
It gives him something to talk about. So I think he's just creating a bit of noise, to be honest. Mm-hmm. You know, the other thing to not, you know, misconstrue from that tweet is it was a power rankings. It wasn't where are they going to finish at the end of the season, right? It's where they are at now after what he's seen from the Blitz. And Perth, you know, they didn't look great, but then again, they didn't need to. I wouldn't read too much into it.
Is the Hotman Cup, so am I right in saying that the Hotman Cup isn't in Perth this year? Because I'm looking at their first 8 games. They've got Melbourne, Illawarra and Cairns at home. Then they're on the road at Melbourne against United. Then they're back at home against South East Melbourne. Then they're on the road against Illawarra, Brisbane, New Zealand. Is he right in saying that there's no more Hotman Cup and there's no more sort of big, long home stretch for them?
I actually haven't looked into this, to be honest, Joseph, so I'm not entirely sure. But from what you've just laid out there in terms of 4 at home and 4 on the road out of their first 8, it sounds very possible that that's the case.
Do you remember writing your article last year and thinking, and did you, I really can't remember from last year, but did they gain quite a big advantage from having those home games? I'm sure they must have. Can't hurt.
Oh, absolutely. It's a great start to the season from them.
Yeah.
Anytime you can open, and we saw that with Melbourne, I think, a couple of years ago as well. They had a whole heap of their, like, I think they had like 7 of their first 9 at home 1 year or something, and that was the year they started off really strong. And then they went on to win the championship, but, you know, you get off to a good start, and it puts you in really good stead. So, it'll be interesting to see what that means for the Wildcats if they don't, in fact, have that advantage to start the season, because it has been kind of a fixture for them in recent years.
Yeah, it's another change for them to overcome. So Homicide's top 9 rankings, or power rankings, he had Sydney, Melbourne, South East Melbourne, Brisbane, New Zealand, Illawarra, Perth at 7, Adelaide and Cairns. I scoured Twitter. I tried to find your tweets when this first came out. I think Liam Santa Maria instigated all this tiers stuff. I couldn't find yours. Did you do a tier? It would have been about a month or so ago. Do you remember doing one?
Yeah, I'm not sure that I did. But I'm happy to share one with you now if you'd like.
Yeah, my question before you give that is, do you think, knowing where you were, has your tier changed after the Blitz or not?
There's only one team that's kind of moved up as far as my rankings
go. Are you doing rankings or tiers?
I can. I've got both.
Okay.
I'm happy to go either way.
Yeah, go tiers first. Let's do that.
Sure. So I have in tier one Melbourne and Perth.
Okay.
I have in tier two Sydney.
All right.
And the New Zealand Breakers and the Brisbane Bullets. And New Zealand's the one that's moved up for me after what I saw this weekend.
Okay.
I just think they are a lot more talented than people realise. And I think Dan Shamir, by all indications, is a fantastic coach.
Okay.
He's really got everyone kind of playing their roles and knowing where they fit in. And for the lack of time they've had together with all those Tall Blacks away at the World Cup, they looked super organised on the weekend.
All right. I agree.
So that impressed me. I have Southeast Melbourne and Illawarra in Tier 3, and I have Adelaide and Cairns in Tier 4 at the moment. Adelaide maybe is a Tier 3 team, but as I spoke about before, the depth of local talent concerns me.
Your standings now, you call them standings or power rankings? What way do you like to categorise it?
I'm happy to call them standings. Okay. It's probably where I think they'll finish at the end of the year.
Okay.
Yeah.
Go through it. Go nine up. Let's do that. That's fine.
Sure. So I've got Cairns finishing in ninth, Adelaide in eighth, Illawarra in seventh, Southeast Melbourne Phoenix in sixth, Brisbane fifth, and then I have New Zealand fourth, Sydney third, Perth second, and Melbourne first.
Okay. And you said New Zealand is the one that jumped for you. Is there any team that went down in your estimation? I'm kind of looking at maybe Adelaide at eight. Did you ever have them higher or not? You always had that worry about the local depth.
I probably had them between that six and eight position. Because I wasn't sure what the Phoenix were going to look like. Illawarra has impressed me a lot more than I expected as well, just in terms of how they're integrating that youth with that experience.
Sure.
So Adelaide may have fallen a spot or two.
What one are you most sort of like, what one gives you the most amount of worry, if any? You know, you've got Sydney at three. A lot of people might go, a bit higher. Brisbane at five. What one do you think, like, if I had to kind of put an asterisk next to it or something, what would be the one you'd most do that to?
Adelaide, to be honest.
Adelaide.
I hate writing off a Joey Wright team, and I think you'll find a way to make them better than what they appear to be on paper.
Sure.
So I could easily see them, again, pushing for a top four spot as they did last year.
Yeah, I agree.
But I think they probably need to make one or two changes. Just not sure what those changes would be at this stage.
Yeah, that makes sense. Tom, that's all I've got for you. I really appreciate it. Have you got any articles coming out that you want people to know about or anything?
Not at this stage. I'm just trying to figure out what's going to happen on the NBL fantasy side, and I'm hopefully writing.
Yeah, what do you do with that? Because I'm looking to get into that this season. I kind of dabbled in it last year. I just couldn't wrap my head around it. I'd never played fantasy before. What tell us about that.
So look, this is a game that's been around for a while, and it's just I guess reincarnated on the NBL website the last couple of years. So I put out a season preview normally, and then a weekly kind of tips, or hints kind of article for people in terms of who's playing well, who's not, looking at the schedule ahead, who are some good pickups, or who people's, some players that maybe they can trade away for a few rounds, and how the values are likely to go up and down. So just help people manage their team through the season. So it's a bit of fun.
Yeah, definitely. I guess that's really about all. Tom, I don't know, is there anything around the traps that's kind of set the spring up or anything fun?
Nah, I think things will probably get a little quiet now for the next week after the Blitz, and then in the build up to the first game, that Melbourne derby, the showdown, I believe they're calling it. We'll see a fair bit of news again, and it's time to get excited because it's going to be a fantastic season.
Thanks very much for listening, everyone. As always, follow me at Twitter at @NBLPocketPod. Subscribe to the podcast and give me a rate and review if you wish. And then also YouTube, NBL Pocket Podcast on YouTube. I've got a bunch of NBA 2K19 NBL Incredibles footage that I've got to edit. It's an absolute mass of it. And then join me on Facebook as well, NBL Pocket Podcast as well. I put up some stuff there. Thanks very much, everyone. Take it easy.